It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see you, Captain Mike.
Good to see you, Captain Sean.
All right. And we continue with a show we started last week. And there's just so much to unpack. And it's really a subject that, yeah, we're talking quail. And we talked with quail with Stephen Mitchell, upland bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. But the process of talking quail is a process of talking what you're doing to your land.
Right.
You know, it's habitat management. And this is seems like a big elephant to eat for a lot of folks when we kind of go through this and what are we going to do? What can we do, you know, to help quail numbers out here? So, Stephen has
got a notebook full of questions.
Yes, I always do because I study this stuff. But Stephen Mitchell coming back on with us and Andrew Green, who is the technical assistance wildlife biologist with the state of Alabama, on with us as well. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and so to revisit, I want to start off with Stephen, something that we didn't get to at the end of the last show. Give us some stats here so we know how steep this hill is. Quail numbers like harvest from 1960 through today and kind of wild quail in the state of Alabama.
Alabama's quail population has declined dramatically since the 1960s, and still remains at near all-time lows. It was reported in the 1960s, some of the estimates were annual harvest estimated as high as 2.8 million. Wow. They're now, I mean, our most recent 2020 postseason harvest estimate was right at 160,000 birds, and only around 14% of those were wild birds.
Wow.
Now, that's almost an endangered species.
I mean, what a decline in numbers here. And if y'all go back, if you hadn't listened last week, you can go back and listen to the podcast of it, talking about the factors that led to that. But here we are today, and you ran through a lot of different things that we need to be doing. Habitat is key, so it's great to have Andrew Green on with us as well this week. Andrew, so technical assistance wildlife biologist, what do you do? Put that in language I can understand.
Well, as Stephen probably put, we wear many hats, you know, what we do. So mainly I'm a wildlife biologist by trade, so we get out and we meet, being a technical assistance wildlife biologist, I meet mainly with private landowners that do have a concern for, like, the species we're talking about, bobwhite quail. There's also, like, today we've been working on hog permits, and that's one of the big guys that's knocking out the little guy. Habitat. So different things like that we talk about, go out and try to do habitat assessments where we talk with the landowner, give them ideas of things that they can do to really increase the populations of the wildlife that they're wanting to work with and the habitat. So it's not necessarily putting our hands on the animal, but putting where they live. We want to make it better. So that's a lot of what we do. I'm also kind of a liaison between federal programs that tend to be the checkbook for some of these things if you qualify to get out and help you do these things on your property. So it's a really good thing that I enjoy doing what I do. You meet new folks every day, and it's an interesting thing, and you get to see, you know, in Alabama there's tons of gates you drive by every day and wonder what's behind that gate, and I'm the guy that gets to see it in a lot of cases.
I'm jealous now. Yeah. I have jealousy getting to see. Let's talk about this then, and I want to get into different programs and specific habitats. But when you, and we'll keep this, although we'll do shows with you in the future, I imagine, on other critters. But let's talk quail, or let's talk those habitats. What is the more often than not? I know you probably see every site is specific. I hear from all y'all biologists. But what do you see more than any other habitat situation when you pull in somewhere, Andrew? What do you see that is facing quail in Alabama? You pull in, you're like, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, you know, a lot of times what you see is, I grew up in southwest Alabama, and that's pine tree is king over that way. That's the number one crop in southwest Alabama. Everybody growing pine trees. Well, there's a certain part that happens with a pine stand. It turns into it's good being a pine stand. There's not a lot of good things in there, and what ends up happening is you lose that low understory habitat that bobwhite quail really need. And so a lot of folks have planted pines. The other thing is with agriculture, now I'm over in southeast Alabama covering the wiregrass, and there's a lot more agriculture over here, so peanuts and cotton and corn, that kind of thing, and it's all heavy agriculture practices. Well, with heavy agriculture practices comes a lot of herbicide use and that kind of thing, knocking back a lot of those good understory forbs and legumes and forages that these animals need to make it. So it's getting out and meeting these people and trying to help them understand, because the way the landscape has changed just in the past 10 years is a huge jump than what, you know, we've seen over the past 50. And trying to help folks understand, because you always meet a landowner and he goes, man, when I was coming up, there was quail. There was 10 coveys of quail between here and the fence row. And then you get to talking about them, and it ends up being that their dad was a crop, you know, it was a crop share type thing where it was tenant farming, and you were a lot smaller habitats and micro habitats. And these birds, they really need that. They need that micromanagement scale of habitat work. The key thing, and I'm sure Stephen has said something about it, is if you're managing for quail, everything else is going to do well. Mm-hmm. They're just that intensive of management. And if you can manage where you're getting quail on your property, everything else is going to do fantastically. It all increases.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you see across the landscape. It just depends on, and it's just like you said, it just depends on where you are.
Yeah. And that fence row you mentioned is long gone by now, right?
What's that?
I said that fence row you mentioned is long gone by now. Those clean farming practices have replaced all the little farms.
You know, absolutely. They're all gone.
What's interesting here, though, is it's not like we have to figure out, or y'all that do this for a living have to figure out what the habitat has to look like, right? It's not that part of the equation. Is not like, I wonder what habitat would increase quail. Y'all, we know,
right?
Now you can paint the picture, but we got to implement it. And we can talk about the ag side, and we can talk about, but I want to start, we're Southwest Alabama guys here. We're in the land of pine trees. So let's talk about
Absolutely. That.
Can you have your cake and eat it too? Can you have pine trees and have quail?
You can. You absolutely can. It's just you have to really sit back and think outside the box on some things and do some things that you're typically not comfortable with. And sometimes that's implementing a heavy fire regime. A lot of folks, fire scares them. But in a lot of cases, if you implement just a little bit of prescribed fire and put that up front, on the long end of habitat management, you see a exponential growth in any kind of wildlife, especially quail. I know there's several folks out there, it's kind of an early successional type plant community that you're looking for, where you're keeping the vegetation low, you're keeping that stuff low, that way the bugs and everything is out there that really enjoy that low-growing habitat. So you have to, and I hate to keep going back, it just depends on the site, but you just have to kind of look at it and assess what you need to do. If it's been fire, they kept fire off the landscape, you know, you can't just go in and throw a match to it and hope something comes. You have to kind of break it down and work through it in yearly rotations or a five-year rotation or something, and try to build to where you want it to go. You kind of have to build the field of dreams type situation.
Okay, but I mean, part of that, you know, we know from conversation we've had with Stephen, I mean, it's like every scenario, whether he's talking clear cuts with us or basal density, all that, it's getting sunshine to the ground, right? We got to get that canopy
Correct.
Out.
That's the big thing. It's absolutely right. It's, you know, you walk out there at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day and you're walking in shade for the majority of the property, you know, you're not getting a lot of that good growth that's coming up and benefiting from the sunshine that you need. So if you can open it up and get to that savanna type situation where you've got some more grasses and legumes and that kind of thing, where it's open ground that they can get out and really mull around in, that's what you want. That's what you really want to see.
Now, of course, this is the tough question here. Is there that in between? And we hadn't gone to ag yet. We're talking in pine, to where, perfect world, I guess you just log the whole thing and keep it in a giant clear cut and early successional and burn it or strip disc or whatever. But to a landowner who says, man, I still got to have some trees here. I got to be growing some board feed here for myself or my children down the road or take care. Is there some number where you can kind of, you're leaning towards managing for quail, but you still got enough pine trees that you're going to be able to cut one day or your children will cut?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just have to assess what you're doing. Sitting down and looking at a stand across its entirety is what you want to kind of do, and then breaking that up into smaller blocks. You know, you can do a micro block management on a larger pine stand or an overgrowth stand that hasn't seen a lot, an older age stand. You can break that up into micro-sized landscapes that's easy to manage the undergrowth, but also you're still growing that older timber to get your board footage, your pulpwood, or whatever you're trying to do, your retirement package at the end of the year, a college plan, or a new pickup truck, or whatever you're doing. You know, but looking at a micro scale or blocking it out is typically what I recommend is when we look at quail management. You break it into a smaller landscape that's easy to manage that understory and getting that sunlight and getting that good growth that you want, but you're also still growing trees.
So what is that when you say in that micro landscape? I know, and I'm fixing to get the old all site specific, but what sizes are we talking about? Managing in 40-acre blocks, 5-acre blocks, 200-acre blocks? What are we doing?
It just depends. It really does, as far as, and I hate to sound like that. You know, it's kind of like the Sunday school answer. What's the answer? Is Jesus. It all depends. I mean, you know, but it's when you look at a property. You know, if you've got, you know, a 100-acre block of timber, let's say, you know, you could break that up into very easily 20-acre blocks and work in that type thing. So it's really not a percentage, but it's what you're comfortable with. And more or less, you're using like natural corridors that's already in those pine stands. Like you're using using your trails, your roads. If it's already been thinned, you're using the logging roads. You break it up on that. You don't have to put it like in a square. You know, you want it to be broke up in different kind of little natural corridor blocks. You know, if you've got a creek running down through the middle of it, you could do one side one year and the other side the next. You know, it just depends on what the landscape of the property looks like.
All right, we're coming back. More of this conversation. Stephen Mitchell and Andrew Green, our guests, have talked about quail habitat management. But we're talking about, you know, making your land better for everything as well. And maybe there's some help out there for you. We'll talk about that when we return. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike, I don't know about you, but just during the commercial breaks, I could listen to Stephen and Andrew talk for hours. Listen to those two guys that do this all the time.
Some of our best discussions are between the breaks.
Yes, we'll have to add those to a podcast going forward. And coming back to this conversation here about habitat, it's good. I know we're kind of getting in the weeds or the forbs or the legumes on this, but it is important because there's some real world decisions when it comes to quail management of what how important quail is, how important timber production is or ag production is, right? There's a seesaw here.
Yes, absolutely.
So I asked a question in our break. I said, do you have to sacrifice your timber to have great quail plantations? So what's the answer to that?
Yeah, Stephen first, then Andrew. What's the answer to Mike's question?
To an extent, and it all depends on your objectives and how fast you want to try to have a increase in your quail population, and can you let that revenue go that you might have otherwise had. So it's up to the landowner, and you've got to make that determination. I mean, you can have both to an extent, but know, a first thinning is going to get you down to letting like a timber stand, a pine stand. That first thinning is going to do some good. You're going to get some light onto the ground, and it'll help a little. But if you really want to open that stand or increase that habitat, you really need to open that stand up.
So instead
down to a, you know, a 50 basal area versus a 80 basal area.
So instead of a one every five row thinning, maybe a every third row thinning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And let's talk about this, Andrew, because this is all, you know, talk about money and quail at the same time. So we want quail. We're going to forego some future timber value because that recreational and that quail hunting is important to us. What about on the other programs, whether we're talking about burning and other programs available? Is there something to help make up some of that loss that we're taking in the future? Is there assistance programs? And kind of walk through what's out there, what Alabama folks can utilize. What can you advise them on?
Yeah, I mean, we as an agency, we don't carry the checkbook. But we give some good ideas of where to go and where to sign up and who to talk with. So one of the big ones that's really has some great initiatives and makes a really good landscape push across is the Natural Resource Conservation Service. And they're under the USDA, which is the United States Department of Agriculture. And under the Farm Bill, they have some great initiatives that is also called, they love acronyms, so I'm going to give everybody the full name. So we talk in acronyms because everybody loves to name a project a long name. So, but it's the Environmental Quality Incentive Program. So there's lots of great things under that they offer, but you have to go sign up for it. You're just not automatically given it when you go in. You have to go through kind of a preliminary qualification through their offices. And some counties qualify for different programs and others don't. I know there's a quail initiative under the Working Lands Wildlife 2.0 for quail, but there's only a few amount of counties that qualify for that initiative just because the pot of money is that's the way it works out. So looking into that thing, going to your NRCS office and talking with the district conservation, I know it's hard down in the world of COVID that we live in now, going and visiting and talking, but it's just as easy to pick up a telephone and ask. Mm-hmm. And these folks are really good about sitting down and talking with you. There's also Quail Forever. There's some stuff out there with that. There's some Alabama Forestry Association. There's some stuff that they can help you with as far as looking at maybe doing some burning or help you get the idea of what to do and who to hire and that kind of thing. We can't talk contractors or anything like that. We give you a big old list and you get to pick who you want to use. But there's a lot of different things that you can do to get out there and meet with those folks. It's a cost share. So you have to put a little money up front. Some money comes out of your pocket, but at least you don't have to put out 100% out of your pocket.
Yeah.
So you got to have to.
And those ratios, and get to that too, and talk about the money. I do want to add in that you talk about different programs. Like at my in-law's place, I put in 40 some odd acres of longleaf under gopher tortoise. It was through that program, even though there's Bob Whites living in it. It was, you know, and there's gopher, but I mean, it was under a gopher tortoise initiative, even though it benefited, you know, Bob White. So I found a program that was longleaf, which I wanted, and I fit, and they scored me, I guess, you know, on the land and did that. So with cost share in these programs, can you, Andrew, come in and tell us what cost share program might work best for us? Can you be on the site, look at the land and say, you ought to look into this. You had to ask NRCS about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of times a good rule of thumb is to sit down and pick three practices under EQIP, which is the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and take those first three. So say this is a property you never worked with, or you bought a fresh cutover.
Mm-hmm.
You got a brand new clear cut that you own now, and you want to put it in the long lease. What I would recommend doing is going out and look into the Environmental Incentives Program if that's the way you want to go. you want to take some of that cost share, get into that cost share money, and go apply for three programs. Site prep, which is going out and either cleaning up the trash on it and doing a herbicide to knock back some of that herbaceous stuff, woody, bushy stuff that's coming up to get that real good early growth like we're talking about. Getting your fire breaks put in place, that way you can have your prescribed burn done later down the road, and your tree planting through your longleaf. And you can either do that through the longleaf initiative or, like you did yourself, you went through the gopher tortoise initiative, which those two things are two different programs, and they have different planting rates based on those two programs. But that would be the three things I would look at first. And okay, going in there and doing that. That way you got a good head start on what you want to do on the five-year run. And then once you get to the five-year mark, you look at the 10-year mark. And then you look at the 15, and then you can continue on. So that's the main thing, is just trying to get a good head start.
Both of those programs, the Working Lands for Wildlife and the Longleaf Pine Initiative, you know, both offer cost-share assistance on practices that restore quail habitat, even though it may not be under the guise, you know, gopher tortoise may be your primary objective, but it's also going to help quail habitat. And they all include practices of prescribed burning, timber stand thinning, planting longleaf pine, and some removing some of those invasive plants that might be there.
Now you got a lot of people's attention, too. Well, I have to ask you about that for removing invasives, because I got all of them. But whatever one you got in the state of Alabama, I got them. But yeah, so people would come. So y'all would come out and talk to us first. That person who got that fresh clear cut, or the person that's got a piece of land that's got trees on it, wants to make a decision, and you can give us the advice before we contact NRCS.
Definitely can. Any landowner that's interested in getting started on improving any type of habitat for quail, especially, they can contact Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. They can contact information's on our website, OutdoorAlabama.com, and Andrew is a part of a whole team of wildlife biologists that we have that are dedicated to assisting private landowners develop management plans and improve habitat for quail and a lot of other wildlife species. So yes, we're always a start, and you know, we partner up with the USDA folks, and you know, they usually have us go take the first look, or not usually, a lot of times they have us go take the first look.
Now you talked about, and you talked about those management plans. That's something y'all do for landowners, like, because you said 2 year, 5 year, 15 year. Is that something y'all would do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we sit down, and you know, if they've got their defined objectives and their goals of where they want to take their property, I've built a many a plan for folks to see their goals and their plans come to fruition. You know, just to get out there and see it. So that's something that we offer. You know, it doesn't cost a thing, and we want to make sure. And a lot of times when we build those management plans, those recommendations for those people that do have the money or what you can sign up, we put that stuff in there. And that's just coming out and seeing the site visit and talking with them and seeing what their goals and objectives are.
That's a great thing to know, because a lot of landowners do not realize that this program is out there and available for them. And everything that you're doing that is great for quail is going to be great for deer and your turkeys.
Right.
Absolutely.
A lot of times, you know, people, private landowners, they know we work for the government, and that's what they lob us in with. And y'all can hear from our voices where we're from. And so we grew up hunting and fishing, and we just love it and wanted to that to continue to be a part of our adult life and our careers. So don't be afraid and just lob us in with government folks, which, you know, we work for them, but you know, we relate with most private landowners.
You sound like my next door neighbor.
For sure. And I tell you what, just a quick one here before we go to the break. So that, once again, it is just go to OutdoorAlabama.com, get the contact info, and call up and say, hey, I need to talk to somebody about getting a site visit. Is that how we word it on the phone? Or
that's basically
absolutely it. Yep. We've got good folks in the offices they'll send you right on to one of us. Or if you've got a specific species you're looking at, Stephen's, he's our quail man. We, if I got a quail question, I call him. You know, or we've got a waterfowl specialist. You got something you want to deal with ducks, we got a guy for that. Got something you want to deal with deer, we got a guy for that. You know, we've got people covering just about every species in the state of Alabama. So if you got a question, we'll put you in the right direction or put you a site visit together.
All right, coming right back. More of this great conversation. Andrew Green and Stephen Mitchell, our guests, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And our guests for the state of Alabama, Andrew Green and Stephen Mitchell. We talked quail some, we're talking habitat a whole bunch, and how to get these programs for landowners who want to have more quail or other kind of critters here, and how that process works. We're talking about this during the break, guys, that people are familiar with CRP. Probably that's, you know, as acronyms go, Andrew, probably the most popular or well-known acronym out there, and then WRP. Those programs were adopted in Alabama. This is a government program, but there are some differences between these and EQIP and others.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, like your WRP, which is the Wetland Reserve Program, and your CRP, which a lot of folks kind of clung to, those things, they're older programs. They've been revamped and updated. So, like, WRP has been phased out altogether, but it changed names. But it's still out there, but it's under the WRE. So it's the Wetland Reserve Easement. So it's changed in a lot of ways, and all these programs have their own little kind of different quirks about them. So when you go in as a landowner and talk with these folks in these offices, you want to make sure you have your goals and your objectives put together, because like WRE and which was WRP, those programs can either be a 30-year commitment, or used to be a 30-year commitment, or a lifelong commitment. Like it could be there for in perpetuity as an easement. And there's a certain amount of things that you can and can't do on those things, and you have to get some permissions because you give it up to go back to wildlife and make it wildlife suitable habitat and that kind of thing, either replanting hardwoods, that kind of thing. Being in a wetland, a lot of what you see is that hardwood replantment. Deal. So you have to kind of sit and look at that. While EQIP can either be, you know, this year program or a 15-year program, you know, those different practices have their own different longevity of how long they need to be on the landscape before you kind of fall back out of it, where the government has gotten what they needed out of you as a landowner, and the practice has been implemented on your property. So you kind of have to look at that kind of stuff as well. You know, you just don't want to go in, I want WRP all the time, and then you get about 10 years into it, and go, man, I wish I had never signed up for that. You want to make sure that you're getting in a program where it meets your goal, but it also gives you the ability to do what you want to in the long run. That way, you know, unfortunately, we're creatures that we don't live forever.
Right.
And you got to think of the generations to come. You know, do you want your kids to have the ability to do what they want to with the property once you're not around?
Yeah, but what if Stephen comes out and says, Sean, you got to get more fire on the ground here and do this. So I'm going to get it a cost share to help me with more fire breaks and paying for the burns in there. So how long am I locked up? I mean, that's I've not changed the land. Well, I am changing the land, but it's not like an easement, right? They're cost sharing for these practices that benefit quail.
Yeah, you have to, and it goes back to that depends. You have to look at where you are and what county and how they operate. So certain things have certain lifespans due to the fact that they're counties that qualify. So it's really hard to give you an idea of the lifespan on some of this. Like some of your tree plantings, you probably run into this with a gopher tortoise. I think the lifespan on that is either 15 to 25 years, mm-hmm. something like that.
That's right. 15.
So
I think
you have to kind of look at that type deal where you're looking at your longleaf, and you've got to follow the guidelines of that practice for 15 years, 25 years, however long it may be, before the government calls it good and it's back. you know, you can manage it on your own.
But what if I'm burning?
What I'm trying to get you to is maintenance and management.
Right, but what if I, let's say I have that stand of trees that I'm not planting new trees, but I'm getting cost share to burn, whichever program we do, quail, gopher, tortoise, whatever it is, and we're getting fire on the ground. Is that year by year commitment, or is that, you know, I mean, if I have a cost share to burn this year, then next year do I, you know, what if I don't burn next year? You see what I'm saying? How long is that kind of contract?
I think the last time I looked, it's like you've got 2 years to get it burned. So if you sign up for a burn, I think it's either 2 or 3 years you've got the ability to get it burned. You've got to get it done.
But once the burn is done,
you're done with that.
Satisfied.
Okay. You're done with that burn.
Okay. And Stephen, we were talking earlier too about, you know, we talked woodlands here with Andrew, but also y'all were talking about farm habitats. Same kind of programs for people who have ag land that want to, I remember looking at CP33 was one and some things like that for agricultural land.
There are still some of these programs for ag land. Andrew would probably be more familiar with those.
I mean, do you have a favorite? I guess I'm going to let Andrew get into how we do this, but if somebody has ag land and you're going out doing a site survey, they want to get quail, what do you want them to do with that ag land?
I want them to install buffer areas along the edges of those fields or hedgerows, alongside roads. Those buffer strips, you know, 50 feet wide all through there, especially on areas that are unproductive ag land, you know, let's grow some quail on it.
Okay. So, Andrew, Stevens just came out to my property, my ag land, and said, I got to get some buffers. I got to split this up. What do you got for me?
Yeah, go look at that in EQIP program. Go look into those and dive into that. I forget the numbers. I don't have that in front of me today. I'm sitting here looking at hog permits. But there's corridor planting and that kind of thing. Those field borders, like Stephen was talking about, those numbers are available. Those practices are available for you to sign up for and try to get qualified for to do that. So you'd have to sit down and look that over. And when you go visit an NRCS office or you talk with them on the phone now, you tell them you want corridors, and I'm sure they'll pull that up for you and look at that and add that into for your request for funds, that kind of thing.
So, I mean, after y'all do a consult with us and we've talked with you, when we go into that NRCS office or we get them on the phone, like you were saying, we're going to have some language. You're going to have given us some terms and things we want to do that they're going to understand real fast what we want.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I can't let this go. I know we're talking about quail and other habitat management, but you said it twice here, and it's Mike and I are interested.
I was hoping you was going to bring that up.
And we'll probably have to do a whole full show on this in the future.
I was thinking the same thing.
But hog-wise and hog permits, what about – because we had reported, and I hope I felt like we had some doings in this with our local congressman at the time, talking about hogs and what he pushed through in, you know, in legislation in Congress, but money for hog trapping in Alabama and all that. What is that? Is that still there? What kind of cost share is there?
There's some cost share, and they've got some pilot programs going on. So there's certain counties throughout the state where they've got the USDA trappers hired through animal services and all to come in and trap hogs off of your property. And it's coming in, and there are also some things on the works that they're working with this pilot program where they're talking about doing cost share with traps, so helping you purchase a trap, helping you get the equipment you need to trap hogs on your place. There's some different things that they're about talking also with this pilot program of, you know, really working with these counties and soil and water conservation districts to rent you a trap. So the soil and water conservation district has a trap, and you may rent it from them for a certain period of time.
Like a seed drill, like going and getting a seed drill, you go and get a trap.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's only in a certain amount of counties, and it's only like over this way, and it's picked on watersheds. So Sumter County, Escambia, Baldwin County, Geneva, Houston, and Henry, they're really working on those right now. seeing if this is a legit program where it's economically feasible and it's really going to put a lot of good things on the landscape for moving this invasive species that we're dealing with in every county now.
Well, why wouldn't they do it in all counties? Is it just because of cost?
It's funding. It's
funding. Okay. All right. Yep. Now, I know there was a time when last year, I think they would pay 75% of the hog trap. If it cost $10,000 for a hog trap, they would pay $7,500 on that. Is it still like that now in certain counties?
In certain counties, yes, sir, and it just depends on a lot of times with that program, they were looking at getting more landowners signed up. So if you were the guy that was interested, they wanted you to get your neighbors involved and get all of you to come sign up. That way you're reaching a larger landscape. So that some of those programs are still kicking around out there. Definitely want to put your name in the hat for that and try those out. You know, but that's going in and talking with these district conservationists in your counties and seeing what's available.
And I know, like down here in Mobile County, and I know you didn't say Mobile County, but man, I want to tell you what, the hogs down here in South Mobile County are super bad. And it'd be great to have some kind of program down here for people to have the availability of getting some traps.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, this pilot program, I'm hoping it's going to show a lot of good things. And you know, We help talk it and help promote it and that kind of thing on our side of the aisle, but the USDA is really the big proponent in this, and they've got a lot of good guys out there doing that. So it's just getting out and talking and seeing how this program works. So once the pilot program ends, they'll kind of do a big assessment and see if we could go statewide with it. So. It's a good thing. It's something that we've needed for a long time. I'm hoping we can see a lot of good things come down the pipe in later years.
All right, coming right back. More with Andrew Green and Stephen Mitchell. We're talking about quail habitat, habitat in general, and programs out there for landowners. This is an important discussion. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. And so much information in here. Reminder, all these shows go up in podcast form. You can grab them through fmtalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab, or if you subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, all those places, the podcasts are up, because a lot of information in here for landowners and quail freaks alike.
So, while we got these Auburn boys on here, I'm not going to talk football, so don't get there, okay? But there's always been this talk, and I don't know whether it was a myth or is it a fact or whatever, that Auburn was working on a program that was going to make something or do something to make feral hogs sterile. Was that a myth? Is that something that Auburn was working on? Or can either one of y'all talk about it?
Well, it's been sidelined. There's been some research done, and we just you can't just target pigs. Unfortunately, you end up getting a lot of non-targets, and we don't want that.
Yeah,
we want to make sure the delivery is straight to the problem.
Right.
So
right.
It's been sidelined and put back in research, and that's about all I can say on it.
Yeah. That's not an actual myth. Then, I mean, I've heard people say that. Oh, Auburn's coming out with something. Auburn's coming out with something.
But there was a discussion.
There was a discussion on it. So that's good, And it didn't work out, and sidelined it, and maybe you work something else out, something down the road.
I got some bands I can give you from the farm. We can do it one at a time with sterilizing. Band.
Hey, if you're willing to get in there with them, I'll be glad to put you on a plate.
Yeah, I'm not.
And I'll video.
It'll go straight to YouTube. I hear you. Guys, I hate that we're running out of time on this, but once again, Stephen Mitchell, upland bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, and Andrew Green is technical assistant wildlife biologist for the state, working this issue here. For people who want to get more quail on their property, there's programs for that. But at the same time, y'all said there's some of the same practices. I mean, these are good for – God forbid somebody can care about a quail, I got to talk to them. But if they don't, turkey, deer benefit from these same programs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And they can go for turtles.
Yeah, and go for tortoises on our plate. Yeah.
It all does good. It all does good.
And cost shares are out there. Y'all will help us get a program and point us in the right direction, right? You'll send us to the NRCS with some language because that's, you know, that's a barrier here. Somebody hears us talking and they'd be like, yeah, I don't even know what to tell those folks. I'm going to sound stupid.
Absolutely. That's kind of why I say I'm kind of liaison. I try to, sometimes when in government work, the language gets lost and it just tends to be too hard for folks mm-hmm. to understand. And that's not saying anybody's, it's just you just don't know. Mm-hmm. So if we can build your knowledge base on what you tell folks, you're better in the long run, and that's why we're here. We want to build your knowledge of what your goals are and how to reach them, and that's what we want to do. If we can build your knowledge and give you the terminology to use where you feel comfortable going down and sitting these projects and programs, hey, I've done my job. I've done what I needed to make sure you can reach your goals and objectives, and that's what we all want to do. We want to help everybody build the best habitat they can on their place to get the most benefit. That's what we want.
And there's real money out there in assistance.
Absolutely. There is. You just have to sign up for it, and you have to go through the gambit to get it. Now, it's not just a given, but you have to, if you work at it, it's just like everything. You're going to have to work at it, and you're going to have to sign up for it. But if you qualify, you'll be given the tools you need to make sure it works for you and everybody around you. So,
Andrew, thank you. Stephen, thank y'all, and going to get y'all to come back on soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, guys.
All right. There it is. A wealth of information.
Yes.
We're out of here. Prep Sports Report's on the way next.